Welcome to Parent Talk, the show for parents, brought to you by the India Community Center. I'm your host, Vidya. As always, this is a live show and the call-in number is 510-770-1550. As a parent of two kids, there are many days I feel like I'm in a battle zone. I say things like, do your homework or you won't get to play your video game. And if you score a goal in your soccer game, you can have 30 extra minutes of TV time. But is this the best way to get kids to achieve their goals? Here with me in the studio today are two people who feel that there is a much better approach to communicating with our kids. They call it nonviolent communication. My first guest is Bob Niederman. Bob teaches nonviolent communication to teens, adults, and parents. He's the co-founder of Silicon Valley Nonviolent Communication Nonprofit and Mindful Interactions. Both organizations are dedicated to promoting nonviolence. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Thank you very much, Vidya.
My next guest is Gayatri Narayanan, who's a parent educator in nonviolent parenting with Echo Parenting and Education in Los Angeles. She is dedicated to helping parents change their relationships with their children to one that is based in empathy and connection through mindfulness and nonviolent practices. Welcome, Gayatri.
Thanks, Vidya. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, if you want to benefit from the expertise of our two guests today and learn about communicating with your kids in a better way, do call in at 510-770-1550. Sometimes we do talk about sensitive issues, so we'll keep your calls confidential. So, Gayatri, let's start with you and tell us, give me a brief overview of nonviolent parenting.
Okay, so basically, just to first get started, in order to understand what nonviolent parenting is, we should first understand what we mean by the term violence.
Okay.
So by violence, we mean anything that hurts the heart, mind, body, or spirit of another being. So from a parenting standpoint, we're talking about anything that hurts the heart, mind, body, or spirit of a child.
It's a very broad definition.
It's a very
and as
broad
a parent,
definition.
Sometimes, you know, we hear this thing saying, don't be a friend, be a parent.
Right.
And sometimes that seems to imply that you're supposed to be strict with them, you're supposed to teach them the right ways of doing things.
Right.
Isn't that right?
That's right. But, so when we talk about violence, it includes things like shaming, manipulation, yelling, spanking, comparing, threatening, all of those kind of come under that umbrella of what we mean by something that could hurt the spirit or the mind of a child. So when we talk about nonviolent parenting, we're saying let's get beyond that and see, okay, how do we connect with our child empathetically? How do we connect with what is going on with them in the moment? What is alive for them in the moment? Connecting to their feelings and needs, mm-hmm. and acknowledging them as complete, full human beings. So we think as children, you know, because they're younger than us, they're smaller than us, that they're somehow less than us in terms of the way, in terms of feeling and needs. But they have as many feelings and as many needs, mm-hmm. as an adult does. And to sort of honor the child and the full being of that child and the core dignity of the child when we interact with them.
But I think it's very difficult for a parent to internalize that the child has, say, better judgment or more experience, because that certainly doesn't seem to be the case, right? Bob, what do you think? I mean, is this something that that's not natural for a parent to feel that I know more than you because I've lived longer than you?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up. In fact, we were just talking about it before the show, Gayatri and I, and we were saying how much trouble it is for her sometimes when the child wants something and she wants something else. It's like a conflict comes up. And if you're more powerful, you have more information, you have more experience, of course it's the first impulse is to say, I know better than you,
right.
Do it my way.
And I've said that many, many times.
Right.
So in a situation like that, tell me something specific. What are the specific techniques of nonviolent communication? Is it the same as mindful parenting? Because I've heard the terms used interchangeably.
It's very similar to mindful parenting. So the first thing is, of course, we have an impulse to say, no, do it my way. I'm right, you're wrong, there's that way of thinking. So that's very common. So the first thing we would suggest is to take a breath. Take a breath and get in touch with, okay, now, let's see here, what's going on? My child is asking for something. What could be going on with my child?
Mm-hmm.
What could be going on with me? This takes a little bit of time.
Okay.
It takes a moment of reflection. Because what we suggest for people to do is get in touch with, wow, what am I feeling?
Mm-hmm.
What am I needing? This takes time. We need to take a second or two to get in touch with that. Wow, what could my child be feeling?
Right. Let's take a quick, I'm going to take a quick break here. I know it's a little early in the show, but we seem to be having some audio issues and I want to take a break and try to resolve them because this is a pretty important topic and I want to really hear what Bob and Gayatri have to say. Welcome back to Parent Talk. We had some mic issues and hopefully they've been resolved. And today we're talking about mindful parenting or nonviolent communication. And my two guests are Bob Niederman and Gayatri Narayanan. Bob, I think we probably missed out on the question that I asked you before the break. And I'll ask it again, which is, are there specific techniques associated with this, with nonviolent parenting? And we'd love to hear your answer again.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, the first thing, as I mentioned before, is to breathe. Take a breath, because many times we think, oh, I must say something right away because my child is doing something. And often that's not the case. We can take a breath.
Don't react, is what you're saying. Don't react immediately.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Our immediate reaction often are not the best ones. If we can just take a moment and say, okay, what do I feel right now? What do I need? What is my child feeling right now? What does she need or what does he need? Just take a moment to reflect will really help improve the situation. Mm-hmm. Because then you have a chance to actually think about, there are many things that could be happening and there are many resources I could call on right now if I just take a moment to reflect on them.
Are all situations like that, Gayatri? It sounds very good in theory, but I'm thinking that sometimes, especially in our busy and scheduled, highly overscheduled lives in some sense, we are getting, we're doing things one after the other. We're getting to places one after the other. And really, we don't have space and time in our lives for that kind of reflection.
Right.
So essentially, we're always putting out fires in a way. So how do you apply it when that's the situation? And listeners, we'll try and get to some very specific examples as we go forward. And I would love to hear your thoughts as well. Our number is 770-1550.
Right. And this is a very valid point, Vidya. I mean, a lot of people bring up this issue about, okay, we're going on with our lives. How do we take time to stop and give our children empathy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing about this is, the first thing is to realize, that this is a practice. It's something that actually we are really undoing a lot of our own conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
From what, the kind of parenting that we've been exposed to,
mm-hmm.
and what we call the dominant paradigm, which is really the prevalent paradigm that we've
right.
been, and
it's, we're the boss.
We're the boss, mm-hmm. and it's centuries of, of this kind of parenting, right? Which is mm-hmm. what we see. It's like domination paradigm. So it's all about, okay, who's on top, who is on the bottom, and how can I control the people on the bottom? And that's what we see in our world all around us. So it's
right.
not just...
Right.
So our schools are built that way.
Absolutely.
Our homes are built that.
That
way. Our corporations are built that way. So we're saying, okay, now we want to move away from that. And
mm-hmm.
it's like, so this is really a paradigm shift. So it is a matter of practice and a commitment to say that this, we want to raise our children in a more empathetic, connected way.
Mm-hmm.
So, and one of the fundamentals of nonviolent parenting is to realize that every behavior is an expression to meet a need. It's a strategy to meet a need. So what we're seeing on the outside is just the behavior.
Right.
And we are reacting to the behavior. But when we look at it through this new lens that says, okay, the behavior is just an outward symptom.
Mm-hmm.
And what's underneath that is a need, a core need
right.
that the child is trying to meet.
Right.
And there's some core feelings that a child is expressing.
Mm-hmm.
So when we view it through that lens, we are then able to step back and say, and just observe without
okay.
judgment, without evaluation. So the first step in nonviolent parenting is observation.
Okay.
Is actually just looking at it through just clear observation without any evaluation and without any judgment.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what you see, what you hear, what you're feeling, what you're needing,
mm-hmm.
observing yourself and observing what's going on.
Articulate this process in your head?
Yes. So you really, because I'm still in the mode of like practicing this, it's not something that comes to me immediately and naturally.
Right.
But over time, what I'm finding is it's becoming easier and easier to do that. So really to be able to just, and that's where the mindfulness practices come in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the connection between the mindfulness and the nonviolence, because both of these are very, very deeply connected. Because what we're saying is we need to be aware of what is really core, in the core sense, what's going on inside me right now.
Mm-hmm.
And what is going on with this other person. And when we connect at that human level,
uh-huh.
there's some magic that happens. And that's the magic of nonviolent parenting. There's actually a transformation that happens
mm-hmm.
with both the person you're interacting with and with yourself. And then you're in a position then to then come up with solutions. So the solution actually is the last step. It's like, so our instinct is to solve the problem first.
Right, absolutely.
Right? So we're saying that is really the last step. The first step is observation, then connecting to feelings and needs. Then you're engaging with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like you engage with your own body.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. and figure out, okay, do I need to regulate? Do I need to drink a cup of coffee? Do I need to take a couple of deep breaths right now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I need to take a walk? You know, it depends on what the situation is. But I mean, it's like, and sometimes
yeah.
you don't have the time to do that.
You
don't
yeah.
have the time. You're right. Absolutely right. But, mm-hmm. but basically it's like engaging with yourself and saying, okay, now, and then giving the empathy. And as soon as you give the empathy to the child and say, hey, you know, what, you know, are you feeling really mad right now about this? Do you really need me, you know, express, you know, sort of verbalize, okay, what is this, what is the feeling and what is the need that the child is feeling?
It's very therapeutic in some sense, what you're saying. Isn't that what a psychologist will do? It'll reflect your feelings back to you and
right.
say, am I on the same page as my child in terms of
right.
understanding what is going on?
Right.
Is that what you're doing?
Exactly. You reflect and you empathize and you connect. There's really an attunement that happens. It's not mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
When it's mechanical, it doesn't work. When you actually, you're really connecting with that child in that moment. And the language can take on different forms depending on your style and how you actually interact with the child. It doesn't have to be a prescriptive kind of dialogue in that sense. But the core idea is that you connect and you empathize. And as soon as you do that, there's a certain release that happens both in the child and in the parent.
What you're saying is I need to put myself in the shoes of the child. Is that right, Bob? Is that what that means? That at that moment, you're able to push aside your personal emotions and drama and your anger and your frustration, and instead you're the child for that moment. Is that what you're suggesting? It's really hard.
It's very hard. It's very challenging to do. It does take practice, and yeah, but that is what we are asking people to do. But the very first thing is to get in touch with, what am I feeling? That's number one.
Okay.
And then say, okay, that's what I'm feeling. Now I'm going to put it aside for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
What could my child be feeling? What could they be? What is their need? Because at first we think, what are you doing? Stop doing it. I mean, that's
right.
our first impulse.
Absolutely.
And so we want to breathe.
Every day.
Yeah. So we want to breathe and say, okay, wow, I'm really irritated. Wow. I have a need for order here. Okay, I wonder what my child could be needing right now. What are they feeling? If I can just take a moment to think, mm-hmm. Maybe they need... whatever, and take a guess. And if you can do that, it's really powerful. Shall I give you an example?
Mm-hmm.
There's a woman that came to one of our classes, and she said every single day she picks up her children from school. They scream and they yell all the way home in the car. She can't stand it, and she screams at them, and then they scream louder. And the more she screams, the more they scream. And she says, I can't stand my life with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
So after taking our class for a little while, she says, okay, I'm going to try something different.
Okay.
She picked up her kids, and again, they were screaming, and she pulled her car over to the side of the road. She took a breath. Like that. I said, okay, now. She looked at her oldest son. She said, are you wanting attention so you can finish what you're trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you want? And the boy stopped. She said,
For a change, he was being asked for his opinion.
Yeah, that's what I want. Okay, then she turned to her daughter and she says, and Sally, do you want to be heard? Is that what you want? You have an idea and you want to be heard? And you want to have your turn to be heard? Daughter said, well, yeah. She says, okay, I understand. And then they looked at each other and said, well, after you finish, is it okay if Sally talks? Yeah, that's okay. It's okay. Then they drove off. That took 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
They drove off, and there was like silence. Nobody needed to talk for a while. They just,
they
wow,
just
that
needed
was
to be acknowledged.
Yeah, they needed to be acknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are a person. They want to be acknowledged. They want to be present.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be felt. And suddenly they were. So.
How old were the kids in this example?
They were, I believe one was 8 and one was 6.
So even kids as young as 6 have these strong wiring in their brain about, it's my turn, I feel this way. And what this mindful parenting or nonviolent communication is suggesting is that no matter how young they are, they need to be respected for what they feel and how they think. And that is something I think is a departure for many of us, because we certainly think that at that point their judgment is under question, and it's something that at that point they need to be mentored in a way. So I guess my question would be, how young do you start? Actually, you want to take that?
Yeah, I can take that. There's actually no age for this. This is from the time the baby's out of the womb.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying that every being has core needs and core feelings. So when a child cries, he's expressing a need. I want to be changed. I want to be fed. I want to be bathed. Or, I mean, not bathed, but I want to go to sleep. You know, there's needs that even a very small baby expresses. So when a mother's in tune with those needs, mm-hmm. we're able to meet them, and the baby's feels felt, and there's strong neurological development that happens. And brain development that happens as a result of this connected relationship. And that, so there's a lot of research to support, and, you know, the healthy brain development of children, mm-hmm. When we, practice empathetic and connected parenting. So what happens is when the baby is born, only 25% of the brain is developed.
Okay.
And between the ages of 0 and 5, 90% of the brain development happens. And that's when all of the wiring and relationships between the lower, middle, and higher brains is made. So when the brain is developed in relationship with another person, with the adult, with the caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
So the quality of that relationship is what determines how the brain develops and how it integrates. So when the child is feeling fearful or neglected or abandoned, I mean, all of those kind of things are forming strong wirings in the brain, mm-hmm. that says, okay, this is the world. It's forming its relationship with the world based on the relationship with the caregiver. So when we have that connected relationship with the child,
mm-hmm.
those strong, basically.
No, but then I don't think you can say that the way we parent right now, or the way we've been conditioned to parenting, is a non. Is not a close relationship. It is. We do have close relationships with our children. Maybe the dynamic is different, but I think it would be very unfair to parents to say that they are connected to their children.
Absolutely.
And that they don't. And any parent, you know, whether they're following this practice or not, will be the first to say, I care about my children. I'm doing what I do out of a belief that what I do is the right thing for them, and that my experience and my time that I've spent in the world has taught me certain things that they are not privy to yet.
Right.
Would that be a fair thing to say?
Absolutely. And I think that's at the core of it. I think as parents, we all want to do the best for our children.
Mm-hmm.
And we all want to love and connect with our children. And it's a question of how we do that and what are the tools we have to engage with our children in that connected, empathetic way. But to go back to your previous question, this is something really that is applicable to all ages. It has nothing to do with age. It's all through the development of the child.
So let's take a break at this point, and when we come back, we'll talk about some more specific questions. Let's take some specific examples. I'll share you some of my horror stories, and maybe you can give me some enlightenment. And listeners, if you want to call in and share your issues with parenting your children or any dynamic in the family that you would like to change, this is a great time to call. It's 510-770-1550. Talk. We've been talking about mindful parenting or nonviolent communication with our experts, Bob Niederman and Gayatri Narayanan. We have a caller on the line. Let's go to the call. I guess we lost the call. Kiran, if you are listening, please call us back. Let's see. Yeah. Welcome to Parent Talk.
Hi.
Yes, hi. We lost you there for a second. Go ahead.
So I have a different situation with my kid. So he's very active, hyperactive, and he's good at music, dance, everything. But when it comes for food,
mm-hmm.
he'll scram and, like, you know, he don't eat anything, not even milk. He don't drink juices. So I don't know. We tried all possible ways, you know, cooking his favorite thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he will first say that, oh, I love it, it's my favorite. But after the first bite, he will say no.
So, this is an interesting issue. We actually talked about something like this in a nutrition show as well. But does mindful parenting have a solution for, or at least an approach for something like this?
So, my understanding of the question is that, how old is this child?
How old is your child?
He's 4 and a half. He's going to be turned 5 in September.
4 and a half and 5, and he takes a bite of food, but then says he doesn't want any more. Is that the challenge?
Correct.
And so you're wondering, wow, what about nutrition? How does the child look? Do they have energy? Do they have enthusiasm for life? Do they look like they're thriving? Or is it a girl or a boy?
He's very energetic, I would say.
Uh-huh.
And he talks a lot about food. Whatever food you give, he will talk a lot about it.
Sounds like
a
future TV presenter.
And all. But when it comes to the eating part, he would say, Daddy, I don't like this.
Ah.
And for milk, he will say the same thing.
Whatever you give him, he says, I'll take a bite, but I don't really like it. What else have you got for me?
Right.
Yeah. And you can't find anything else. You've given up on finding more solutions. Well, I'm not sure that nonviolent parenting can do a lot about this. I think the key thing is just to sort of tune into, well, what does this child like to eat? And usually children, like everyone else, they have their own bodies and they're relating to them. And if that child is thriving, they're talkative, they're lively, they're probably doing okay. But if you're really worried about it, I would take them to a doctor. I don't know, Gayatri.
What are you thinking?
Yeah, no, I'm actually remembering what my pediatrician had said, like, because we were the same way. Because, and this is something that actually is very core at the Indian heart, mm-hmm. food and, like, you know, feeding our children.
Oh,
is like
yes.
a big.
It's an expression
it's
of love.
Love. And it's yes. like, you know, it's like if my children have to eat and they've got to eat well and come on, you've got to eat this vegetable, this chapati. This, I mean, it becomes actually what happens at some point is actually it becomes more of a control issue and we forget that the child has a full understanding of their own bodies. And when we step back a little, mm-hmm. the child actually has an opportunity to tune in to say, okay, you know, am I hungry right now? Mm-hmm. Because all the time we are telling them when they're hungry and what they should be eating. So they forget their own bodies in the process as opposed to when
That's
we actually step back. And so because my pediatrician actually said this, he said, you know, I've been practicing pediatrics for 30 years. In this society, I have never had a child die of starvation or malnutrition. It has never happened in my entire practice of 30 years. And so that's a point that, you know, because children actually know somehow, you know, okay, I need, and so they'll go maybe a day or two eating very little, and suddenly on the third day they'll drink and they'll eat and they'll, you know, they'll suddenly, like, you know, eat whatever they need. And so somehow they have their own way of regulating and figuring out what they need and when they need to eat it.
I have a follow-up question to this, and I'm going to ask this on your behalf, Kiran. You know, it's nice to say that the child has his or her own cues. Mm-hmm. You know, they have they're responding to their body's needs for food and the body signals for food. But honestly, we live in a world where we have 20 minutes to eat breakfast and get to school. At that point, what does the parent do? The child says, I'm not hungry. I'm going, and your clock is ticking. You need to get the child to school. He's woke, you know, you have like 15 minutes. And then you have a battle royale happening there because the parent is saying, come on, have a glass of milk at least and then go. Because the parent is thinking, what is the child going to do whole day in school without eating? So how do you approach it at that point?
So really, and this is where that creative solution thing happens. Because basically, when we get stuck to this idea that, okay, they've got to eat and then go to school, that we've limited our possibilities. But if we mm-hmm. said, okay, you know, you really don't seem like you want to eat right now and you're not hungry. How about I give you this bar when you go to class, you know, and in 10 minutes when you feel hungry, can you eat this? Or take this tub of yogurt uh-huh. and go eat this, you know, in 10 minutes when you feel hungry. So when you do that, what you're doing is you're giving that child that little bit of choice and saying that, okay, you know, here, you know, I'm giving you the food.
Some choice. You pick when
you want to eat. And more often than not, they will eat because when they're hungry, they'll eat.
Right.
And the thing is, and so this is something that, I mean, it's very hard as an Indian, especially as an Indian parent, to remove from this whole. And I had these struggles with my son too before I got into nonviolent parenting. It was like this food thing became like this, you know, it became this issue, you know.
Right.
And it's an issue for him because his buttons get triggered as well. Because as soon as I bring in food, even if it's something that he likes, he's going to.
Because it's a control issue now. You're asserting control and then the child is asserting control.
Exactly. So it's no longer about the food. It's no longer about nutrition. It's no longer about health of the child. It just becomes this, you know, trigger for each other, right? So when you actually step back and say, okay, here's a child who's expressing something and he's wanting to express his autonomy as an individual and saying, okay, here's my body and I know when I'm hungry.
Let them.
And so that, and when you honor that, the child responds beautifully.
I want to try this. This is very interesting. Yeah. Bob, you had something to add.
Yes. So many times we have repeated activities like this in the morning. Every time, there's 10 minutes to eat breakfast and then tomorrow it's the same thing and Wednesday is the same thing. Oh my gosh, my week is just filled with this. When you have repetitive behavior like this, one of the strategies you can do is in the evening when it's calm, you have 10 or 15 minutes to talk about it. You can talk about it with your child. Say, you know, I noticed in the morning we get stressed out. I wonder what we can do. We can have creative solutions. You know, I get stressed out. You get stressed out. How do you feel at that time? And then the child can say, well, yeah, I don't like it when you do this. And then you can say, well.
So can a four-year-old articulate that?
Yes. And you can. You can say, and let's think of solutions together. Wonder if, like Gayatri suggested, I wonder if I gave you a bar at that time, would you enjoy that? And they might say, no, but how about some celery with peanut butter on it? okay, you can negotiate, and you can, and then the child has control. And say, wow.
But essentially, what you're telling me is that you have to treat your child as an equal. As an equal member of your family and equal dynamic. Is that right?
I would say we treat each other equal in terms of respect, needs, and feelings. Mm-hmm. Not in terms, I mean, like you're saying, the parent obviously has more information about certain things. We have, you know, like you're saying, certain, you know, judgment that we have in situations that we know, you know, about certain things. When it comes to safety, when it comes to our values, when it comes to socializing, I mean, there's certain things that we want our children to learn.
Right.
And so the parent then becomes the guide and the coach. And it's no longer about control. So it's not about setting rules mm-hmm. and then fighting about the rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's so in nonviolent parenting, we don't have rules. We call them limits. And it's kind of how do you set the limit?
Boundaries.
Set mm-hmm. little boundaries and limits in a nurturing, nonviolent, and in a collaborative way, so that it's no longer just about control. Because with rules, what happens is it's about, okay, when you break the rule, now what are we going to do? Are we going to punish because now the rule is broken? Then again, it becomes about control, right? Because
right.
it's like, what's the point of a rule if you don't
and rules are meant to be broken when it
right?
comes to kids.
So
yeah.
then it just gets into, again, a control issue and about punishing and all of that stuff, which actually really doesn't work. So it's about really becoming an emotional coach and a guide and an educator on matters of whether it's eating or sleeping or partying or whatever.
School. Let's get to school. We had another caller during the break, and her question was, given the current educational system and how competitive it is, parents feel the need to expose their children to a lot of additional coaching, additional, you know, put them in tougher courses, give them some enrichment, put them in enrichment classes, and then it becomes a real tug of war with the child, because then the child is saying, I don't want to go to a math enrichment, I don't want to, and it happened with my child too, and funnily enough, I can quite empathize with the caller, where we put her in a math club, and I have to admit that it was because everybody else was doing it, and I felt that she would be left behind. And even now, I can see that there are things that her classmates know that she doesn't. Not in the curriculum, but extra curriculum. And she hated every minute of it. She went because she was an obedient child. And I looked back on it and I thought, okay, so what was the solution? She is going to be behind her classmates who are doing all these things. But at the same time, it's not something she enjoyed. So this is really not the way I want to be dealing with my child. So for this caller and myself, you know, I want to ask, do you have a solution? Do you have a way forward?
Yes, this is a wonderful question, and it comes up all the time. I live in Palo Alto, and in Palo Alto, there's tremendous competition. Particularly as you get older, it gets more and more and more, like junior high school or middle school is stronger, and then high school is really intense. And in fact, somebody went through Gunn High School. They said, you know, Gunn High School is way more competitive than UCLA. My son told me that when he went to UCLA. He says, wow, yeah, it's
mm-hmm.
big.
Yeah.
So yeah, what do you do about this? So I want to, first of all, have a lot of empathy for parents around this. This is a huge issue
mm-hmm.
when you're not just dealing with your child, but all of your own peers as a parent.
Right.
Like, whoa, is my child going to be able to be competitive?
Right.
So again, here's a time to take a breath and then think about, reflect on what is it I'm trying to do here as a parent?
Mm-hmm.
What's my goal? What's the end in mind? Do I want my child to be a kind of a person who's constantly competitive, looking to the right and their left and saying, oh, am I up? Am I competing? Am I winning or am I losing? Is that what you want their brain to be filled with? Or do you want their brain to be filled with more like, wow, what am I actually called for to do in this world? What are my gifts? What do I care about? What matters to me? What's my contribution?
Mm-hmm.
Where's my creativity? This is what I think is going to be called on if we think about the economy of the future
mm-hmm.
and what people are going to be, who is going to be successful and who is not.
Mm-hmm.
It's those people who can be imaginative and creative and be entrepreneurs and actually offer something unique to the world.
And not cheap.
And not cheap. Right. These are the people that are going to be successful. And so, and our educational system should be designed to help people become more successful later in life and also enjoy their life now, not be highly stressed.
Well, that's not the reality, though. The reality is that, taking this a little bit forward, and you said that, yes, I would like my child to be an imaginative, creative, entrepreneurial person with confidence, right? But then, here's this dilemma. You put your child in the math club, then the child learns some skills that match those of her peers. You don't put the child in math club, she's happier as a result because it's not something she enjoyed. But at the same time, when a math test comes along later, she's done worse than her peers. So at this point, the parent is really stuck because you would like her to learn those skills because later she's going to regret that she didn't learn them. But at that point, she didn't. So
yeah.
How do you deal with that? And you know what? I think we may have to go to another break. But when we come back, we'll try and deal with that question. Listeners, if you have your questions of your own, 510-770-1550. And we're talking about mindful parenting today. Welcome back to Parent Talk. We're talking about mindful parenting with Bob Niederman and Gayatri Narayanan, and we've been talking about some real-life examples of how we parent and how we are conditioned to parent and how we can break that. And obviously, it seems like a really challenging and difficult job. But first, let's go to a caller, and then we'll get back to the example that we talked about earlier. Welcome to Parent Talk.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Nandini. I have a question for either of the two people on your panel. I have teenagers, and usually I'm the parent who empathizes, and I tend to want to agree with the kids, and I want to understand how they feel and, you know, not tell them what to do. My husband is more authoritarian, but between the two of us, I'm the one who literally gets suckered all the time. I mean, children of a certain age can be pretty manipulative. And so how do you avoid that?
A wonderful question. I love this question. It's very common, too. Well, let me answer it this way. First of all, empathy is completely different than agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make that distinction really clear. Listening to someone is not the same as agreeing with them. I can be. In fact, I was this last couple of days. I was with many people who are a completely different political persuasion than me. But I open my heart to them and listen to their point of view. But I don't agree with it, any of it. But I don't have to argue with it. And that's very important
right.
as a parent is to listen, but then say, okay, what is? I'm independent of them. What is it that I feel? What is it that I want? What matters to me in this situation?
Nandini, can you give a specific example? That would help, I think.
Yeah.
Well, essentially, you know, when kids want to get, for instance, video game time, so I'll say, you know what, it's okay, you can have your video games, and it's not up to me to decide when you want it, as long as your homework is done, as long as you're doing well, as long as your grades are fine. I don't want to sort of dictate how much time you get doing your video games. My husband, on the other hand, says, no video games over the weekdays, only video games at certain times, and, you know, very regimented. And, well, my younger son particularly, he rebels against what my husband is legislating. And with me, he's more compliant, but then there are times when, you know, that basic broad rule that I've given is not being followed.
Okay, so here's what I would say is, first of all, I think the first step is a conversation with your husband and to decide not the rule so much as what's behind the rule. Like, what is the need that the rule serves? Let's get clear about that. Why is it that I want, say, this rule, and why is it that you want that rule? Let's find out what the needs are. Maybe he says, you know what, I would like my children to have more free time outside of the computer. There's my rule serves that need. I want them to have maybe more playtime with their kids or more sports or whatever. I don't know what it is, but explore that. And then you can think, well, what is it? Why is it that I want to have my rule? What's behind the rules? What are the needs that this rule serves? If you have that conversation with your husband, that's the best start for then making a decision. Well, how do we want to handle this? And then later I would say, now let's sit down with our kids and say, you know what? These are our needs. Let me hear what your needs are. And let's think of a solution that could meet all of our needs.
Okay.
I think that makes sense. I mean, in the sense, if for instance, your husband's need for them not doing video games on weekdays is that they will not maintain a good enough grade because of that, then maybe there is an argument to be made there saying that he is able to keep his grades.
It's just that I think, you know, he still gets good grades. The thing is that it's that inherent feeling that we feel like we need to control, and that seems to us like a waste of time. And so why would you engage in something that appears to me a complete waste of time? You know what I mean?
So, yes, I think that's a good question. What if your child's needs are different from yours and you don't see the value in what they're doing? And how do you deal with that conflict? That's a good question.
Well, Well, thank you so much. I don't want to take too much of your time, but thank you for addressing my...
Well, thank you for your call. We'll continue talking about this issue because I think it's a pretty valuable issue to discuss as to, you know, what happens if your values are different from the child's values.
Yeah. So let me address this a little bit. We use the word needs in many different ways, but when we're talking about nonviolence, needs actually are about universal values. So it's not like your values are different than mine. Our values actually are the same. There is no real need to be on a computer. That's not what I would call a need.
Right.
There's no need to do other things that we call needs. Like, I have a need for a candy bar right now. Well, that's probably not a need. Maybe I do have a, maybe I'm hungry, so maybe I do have a need for food. So it's the, what we talk about as a need is something that's universal. Like, okay, maybe I have a desire to, I'm bored, and so I want to distract myself, so that's why I go to the computer. Mm-hmm. Or maybe...
You know, I have to interject a small element of disagreement in this, having also a teenager who plays video games. It is that if you talk to them, they will tell you the video game is a need.
Yes,
it
they
is
will
a very addictive thing, and you know, I sympathize with parents who have a problem with their children playing video games because I see where they're coming from. And you may say that it's not a need, it's a need for him to get some kind of relaxation, for instance. Okay, so relaxation is the need, but maybe video games are the way that that provide that need, right?
Yes,
so, but you think that he could relax maybe by listening to good music.
Yes.
What do you do in a conflict like that?
Yes, so that's what we call as a conflict around strategies. So the need might be relaxation.
Right.
I want to do it relaxed through my computer. You would like me to do it through my music.
Right.
And so our strategies do conflict. I agree with that.
Right.
But our needs don't. Our strategies conflict. So if we think about it that way, then we can have a conversation. You can say, okay, I'm the adolescent. You're the mother. I say, well, Mom, I want to play computer. You say, well... Okay, the need is for relaxation. Let's have a conversation about how we could meet the need for relaxation that would work for both of us.
Okay.
Let's have a conversation about that. That could be an interesting conversation.
That's true. I guess if you don't explore it, you wouldn't know. I think we have time for maybe one last question, and I'm going to ask that. And again, I'm going to give a personal example. And it happened on the way to the studio this morning, which was my son had to go to his Muay Thai class, the kickboxing class. He was the one who chose the activity, so he should be motivated to go to it. However, I'm on a deadline, and he's not waking up. At that point, you know, it's like you're pushing the child, get up, you need to go. Because you know that if they don't go, if they don't have the motivation right there to make that decision. So you're doing the thinking and the motivation for them, because you know that once they're in that place, they're going to be fine. So in this situation, how would you deal with it?
Yes, always in this moment-to-moment situation, we always have this struggle like, oh, we've got to do it right now.
It must,
mm-hmm. And there's a radio program going to happen, and that has to – you've got to be
I've
here.
Got to leave.
Two people waiting for you, like us. Yeah, so we're very happy that you actually got here in time. So, yeah, so I agree with you. So what can you do at this moment? I think in that moment, it's very hard to solve that problem because there's too many pressures right at that moment.
Right.
But since it happens frequently, you can start to work on it tonight. When you get home, you can say, you know what? I was really stressed out this morning. I was so frustrated. I had all these needs, and my need is also for you to enjoy your sleep.
Right.
So let's have a conversation about this and see how can we solve these problems as they show up in the future, because they're very predictable.
So you cannot really solve it in the moment, is what you're telling me. You have to do it in a moment where everybody's calm and that issue is not front and center, so that there is a little more exploration of that.
Right.
You have 1 minute.
Right. And actually, you know, for example, even this morning, when you were waking him up, even if acknowledging, saying that, oh, you're really tired and you really would like to sleep a little more. That sometimes, just acknowledging that, just saying that, listen, this is, you're sleepy and you're tired and mommy's asking you to get up and get ready for your kickboxing class. And just say, you know, then say, listen, mommy needs to go to this radio show. I'm running late. So let's get up and go, and then we'll talk about it when you come back. But the thing is, even acknowledging that 2 seconds of empathy there, they're saying that, listen, you're really tired and you want to sleep a little bit more. That's sometimes enough for them to respond. and say, okay, mommy understands. It's about feeling felt. It's about having that feeling of saying that, okay,
somebody understands me.
And that's where that opening to developing solutions comes. Because without that, you cannot solve the problem. Because there's no longer an openness between the two people.
Right.
Because there's a shutdown. You're not open to your parent to say, okay, you know, I'm willing to work with my parent on this, you know, so.
We're coming to the end of the show, and I think what I took away from this wonderful conversation was that I think our kids need to feel understood and valued. And once we take those two steps towards that, we go a long way to getting that relationship going. I'm sure a lot of you who are listening had questions about where are the other resources for this. What I'm going to do is when I put up the recording of the show, please go to indiacc.org/parenttalk and look for past shows recordings. I will put up the information there on all the resources available to parents who want to explore this further. Thank you so much, Gayatri, and thank you so much, Bob, for being with us today. I think this is such a lovely topic that we may love to have you back on the show in the future to talk some more about it. We'll try and schedule that. And that's all for our show today. But before we go, I want to bring a summer camp to your attention. Parents of teenagers, this may be something your child may find interesting and enriching. The camp is called Bay Area Solidarity Summer, or BASS, and is happening from August 2nd through August 6th in Berkeley. It's a 5-day, 4-night leadership camp for Desi youth across California who are interested in political, community, and social justice issues. During the camp, participants will attend workshops, panels, and field trips where they learn about South Asian history in the U.S., immigration, labor, environmental justice. Sounds really interesting for the right teen. If you're interested in applying or you know someone who is, please visit the website at solidaritysummer.org. And as I mentioned, to listen to this show's recording and past shows, go to indiacc.org/parenttalk and scroll down to the past shows link. And if you have an idea to share, do write to me at radio@indiacc.org. Thank you once again, Bob and Gayatri.
Thank you. The show's
producer is Saad Jaffrey, and the theme tune was composed by Naren Pradhan. Tune in same time, same place next week for another show on parenting. Till then, bye-bye.